Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham. And on today's show, we're going to learn about the Army National Guard Warrant Officer Program and check in with the DAV of Minnesota and the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon networks are an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program are vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements as we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. Your help ensures our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you are ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit mnbtyr.ng.mil. That's mnbtyr.ng.mil.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. So I said at the opening, my co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham. He's a retired Command Sergeant Major from the Minnesota National Guard. And Doug, we're going to talk about the Warrant Officer Corps, and that's something that's unique to the Army because the air side doesn't have that that rank.
Yeah, that's true. And as we'll learn as we're going through this interview, we'll talk a little bit about where the Warrant Officer Program or Warrant Officer Cohort actually started. And I think it's got an interesting beginnings. So I'd like to get right to that and introduce our first guest today. This is Chief Warrant Officer Andrew Bachman. And Mr. Bachman currently serves in the full-time position with the Minnesota National Guard as the state quartermaster for the state of Minnesota with the Department of Military Affairs. But tying to our conversation today, you are also the commander of the Warrant Officer course, the schoolhouse up at the up at Camp Ripley, the 1st Battalion, 175th Regiment, RTI, Regional Training Institute. So, Mr. Bachman, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, Doug.
It's great to have you in here. And, you know, the Warrant Officer Cohort, something that I'm very, very familiar with, just fantastic group of people. The silent professionals is one of the taglines, I guess, of the Warrant Officer Program. And before we, or Warrant Officer Cohort, before we talk about that, let's learn a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about your military career, where you came from, and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Andrew Bachman. I'm currently a Chief Warrant Officer 4 with the Minnesota National Guard. I am going on my 27th year of service with the Minnesota National Guard. I got my start back in 1995 as a private E1, went through all that training, and worked my way up through the NCO Corps. And in around 2006, with the help of a lot of good warrants as mentors, I decided to shift gears and move on from the NCO Corps, which I loved and adored, but to transition into that more subject matter expert role. In 2007, I received my, at the time, appointment for W1. They're now commissioned. And then from there, have worked my way up to Chief Warrant Officer 4.
So let's talk a little bit about what that means. I mean, generally, when we're speaking with the public or when the public talks about our military, terms like enlisted corps, the officer corps, they understand what that means. If I was just a general layperson having a conversation with you with really little to no knowledge about the military, how could you describe for me the difference with the warrant officer and how it fits into the grand scheme of things as we talk about this rank structure?
Yeah, this comes up often in my life, and you'd be surprised even how many young lieutenants will come up to me and just ask, Chief, where does the warrant officer fit in? Because we are a bit of a unicorn. There's not that many of us. And what I like to describe to people is I kind of use almost like a football analogy. I'll let individuals know, like the enlisted, so your privates and your specialists and whatnot, they're your players. They're out there on the field. They're doing the plays. They're running the drills. And your sergeants would be more like your team captains. You know, they're the best of the best. They're the ones that are going to make sure everybody out there is executing. But they're still the doers. They're still out there actually playing the game. And then you have your O grades, which a lot of people are familiar with, like captains and majors, lieutenants, generals, colonels. And those individuals would be more like your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, your head coach, your GM. And then, you know, I would even compare maybe your general officers along the line of maybe like ownership. Your warrants would fall into the category of like your defensive line coach, your quarterback's coach, your backfield coach, very specialized coaches that work in a very specialized field. Example, a quarterback coach is going to be able to tell the head football coach, hey, my quarterback right now, he needs to work on X, Y, and Z in order to be successful, and this is what I recommend. In the end, it's still up to the head coach to decide what they're going to do, if they're going to start that guy or if they're going to go with some other option. But that quarterback coach is there as that subject matter expert in that one lane to provide that guidance for that head football coach. And that's a lot what the warrant officer provides for the commanders of the military. We are there to give that commander years and years of experience in one particular lane, be it maintenance, logistics, intel, cyber defense, and admin, a plethora of other different MOSs as well. But that's our role in the Army.
You know, and that's interesting because I remember during my time of service, there was a group of officers, commissioned officers, and even senior enlisted who didn't necessarily like to, quote unquote, lose their key players to become these resident experts or technical experts. I actually embraced it. I thought it was a great compliment to have some of our best and brightest go on and go into that warrant officer program to be that subject matter expert. And that leads into the next piece about what that career path looks like for an enlisted person inside of our Army National Guard or in the Army to become a warrant officer.
Sure. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise you that being a technical position or a subject matter expertise position, that this would be very technical requirements. One of the first things you do is you separate the technical warrants from the flight officer warrants because they have a few different criteria. And I fall under the technical realm. My expertise is in accounting. That's what I do for the Minnesota National Guard. I fall under the logistics, the quartermaster branch. You need to be an E5 or above. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's kind of the entry-level sergeant level, the non-commissioned officer level. You need to be at least at that level to be a technical warrant. For the aviators, that's not a requirement because with aviators, the Army invests a lot of money in aviation. They don't mind if you're a little bit younger. They'll take you. They'll train you. From there, you need to be in the military already, and that's for the technical side. Once again, for aviation, they have a little bit of leeway. There are circumstances, and we used to call it high school to flight school. I'm sure there's an official name to it, but they will take 18-year-olds and they will send them off and get them trained all the way through Fort Rucker as pilots for the military. And then from there, you need to have a GT score of 110 or above. That's basically an arm, for those that aren't familiar, it's part of the ASVAB, it's part of the Army's way of identifying where you'd fit best in the military. And that particular score just shows the Army that it's just always been the score they use for their officer branches. You need to be younger than 46. There is an age, there are age waivers. I've seen them happen before. And then you have to take what's called the Army Basic Leader Course. And that's that course that those first sergeants, you know, are not, I shouldn't say first sergeants because we have first sergeants in the Army as well. But when those E5 sergeants, that is their first school that they go to.
Yeah, the first non-commissioned officer school that they go to. And that kind of helps them to cross that path into the non-commissioned officer corps.
Right.
All right. So we only have like 30 seconds left, and I want to make sure that we're able to cover everything. And so we're going to take a break right here, and we'll come back. We'll finish up this conversation, then we'll talk about the anniversary of the Warrant Officer program. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back with Mr. Andrew Bachman. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your co-host today, Doug Wortham, along with Tom Lyons in the studio here, and we've been speaking with Mr. Andrew Bachman, who's a Chief Warrant Officer 4 in the Minnesota National Guard. And Chief, we were talking about kind of that progression into the Warrant Officer Program, the Warrant Officer Cohort, and you were explaining about how someone can become a Warrant Officer. And I just want to finish up that conversation a little bit. And so I would imagine you're constantly on the look for those NCOs, those non-commissioned officers, that are showing that potential to move into the technical field.
Absolutely. We're always recruiting new warrant officers. That's one of the things that the command chief for the state of Minnesota is always letting us know, like, hey, you're recruiting your replacement. You know, it'll come faster than you think. So we always need to make sure that we have that next individual up that we can get through the training cycle, because it does take a while.
And the warrant officer cohort isn't something new to the Army. I mean, it's been around for a little while, hasn't it?
It has. I think we're on our 104th year now.
And have you had some type of a recent celebration for that? I know it's generally a big deal, right? We celebrate the Army's birthday, all of the components' birthday. What did you do for the warrant officer birthday, if you will?
Absolutely. It just happened on 9 July. And, of course, it's the Army, so on a birthday we got to have cake. So, of course, there was a couple of cakes, one down here and then one up at Camp Ripley. But what we do as a class is that's when we give our Heritage of the Army Warrant Officer course. It's really important to us that future warrants understand their lineage or where they came from. And that's where they understand, you know, back 9 July of 1918 is when it was founded. And at the time, we were a corps. And, you know, the warrant officer progresses from that mine planner services where we originated from. And from there, it continues to grow and grow. And World War II happens, and it grows even more. And Vietnam happens with the Air Cav, and we need more pilots. And it expands from there, and then it continues to grow. And then around 2004 is where we switch over to basically we became just part of the officer branch that we belong to. And that's that switch from Corps to Warrant Officer Cohort. And then from there we're recognized as branch officers. We always had that branch, but we were what we called the Rising Eagle. And that was retired, and now we wear the identical as what our old great counterparts would.
And so I just want to make sure that we really clarify this. We have the enlisted corps. We talk about a commissioned officer corps, but a warrant officer is a commissioned officer.
He is. And that's why I'm very careful not to say commission officer versus warrant. I really don't like that term, because from W-1 to W-5, we are commission officers as well, and we belong to those branches. So when I try to differentiate between the O grades versus the W grades, that's what I'll use instead. I'll say the O grades are W grades, but we're both commissioned officers.
And as a commissioned officer, a W grade, again, you are in a technical field, which means you generally have longevity in that technical aspect, whereas a traditional commissioned officer, your O's, they're moving on from assignment to assignment, and a warrant officer typically will stay inside that career field, that profession, for the length of their career.
Absolutely. The old grade officer, he might go off and do operations or intelligence or logistics and get that generalized approach to everything that we do in the military. So when he becomes a general officer or she becomes a general officer, they're a generalist. We'll stay in that particular field. So even if we move to a different unit, I being in logistics, I will stay in logistics.
And that's why we say that you are truly the technical expert, the subject matter expert, because you get that much time to keep on learning and crafting whatever it is that your trade is.
Correct.
So you are also a commander up at the 1st Battalion, 175th Regiment, the Regional Training Institute. It's at Camp Ripley. And you are the commander of the Warrant Officer Candidate School. So Camp Ripley, great place. You actually are now training new or next generation of warrant officers. And I understand, because I've experienced it, the multiple phases. Can you talk a little bit about what that school aspect looks like and how you get that non-commissioned officer to graduate and become or commission as a warrant officer?
Sure. So we get that NCO that's now converted into a warrant officer candidate, and we get them in what we call a phase one. There's two phases of the program. Phase one is a 5-month course up at Camp Ripley, Minnesota, And we go through everything from leadership evaluations to there's a couple of exams that they have to do that are culminating exams from everything from history to operations to military law. And there's just a tremendous amount of different courses that they go over. We try to keep the pressure up. It's a fast-paced school, and they do a lot of the leadership rank, so to say. Like they'll be the company commander, or they might be the acting first sergeant, or whatever. And then from there, the TAC officers will evaluate them on that. That culminates in August. We have a mentorship meal, and then from there, we send them down to Camp Atterbury, Indiana, and that's where they have their 14-day phase two. From there, they'll graduate as W-1s, and then we have a ceremony at Camp Ripley in October. And then after that, we start the planning cycle all over again for our next course.
And I want to make sure that I clarify this piece, too. I mean, even though we talk about the warrant officer and the technical aspect, you still are coaching, teaching, mentoring, and leadership. The leadership piece of that training is extremely important, isn't it?
It's very important because as a warrant officer, not only do you need to be the technical expert, you are still a commissioned officer. So you may be asked to step into leadership roles and fill in. I have had to do that numerous times in my career. I'm currently a commander. I had to be a S4 logistics at a regimental level at one point because we did not have a major to fill that role. So I therefore filled that role. And believe it or not, when I first started, I was actually a platoon leader just because so many people had been deployed. There wasn't anybody else to do the position. So I was assigned that position for the stay back platoon.
And although not necessarily common, something that you have to be prepared to do, just like all of us do, right? Always be prepared to step up to that next position and take over, step and take the initiative.
Right. Our first priority is always to be that expert and that giving our guidance to command. But if we need to, we'll have to step up and we can do that leadership role as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the need inside the Minnesota National Guard. You know, we talked to the recruiting battalion and both on the Army, the Air Force side, they're constantly recruiting. I would imagine that you're always, of course, training your replacement, but there's got to be a lot of holes out there that you're always trying to fill as well.
Sure. And that always changes just depending on how retirements go and who's coming and going. But, you know, currently the things that we're looking for, I believe it is, you know, cyber is one of them that we're always looking for. Military intelligence is one that's we're always looking for. And then the signal, artillery, and ordnance. Those are ones that we definitely could use some recruits in.
So how would somebody know they're currently serving? How would they know if they're even qualified to become a warrant officer aside from, you know, a general? Like, okay, you need to be a non-commissioned officer, for example. But there's got to be more to it than just that. What are the things that you tell people? These are the qualifications we're looking for. If you have these things, there's probably a good shot that you might be eligible to become a warrant officer.
Right. And so my response as a warrant officer is if you are interested in becoming one, what I would do is find the subject matter expert. And in that case, we have a warrant officer strength manager for the state of Minnesota. And the unit should be able, your chain of command, your unit will be able to get you in contact with that individual. And that individual will definitely let you know if you meet the requirements or not.
So you'd mentioned when you're doing your intro that you're an enlisted person. You made it to Sergeant First Class. You made a switch to warrant officer. Is that because there was somebody that was there mentoring you to do that? You saw some other goal that you could achieve? What really drove you to making that decision that might be able to translate to other people to want to make that same type of a transition?
Right. You know, real quick on that, I had some great warrant officer mentors that helped me in my NCO career just because I was in the logistics field and I saw what they did and I was enamored in how they conducted themselves and how individuals went to them to get the answers. And honestly, I just wanted to be like them. So I made the choice. It was a scary jump, but I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. Well, I've known you for many years and, I'm glad you made the jump too. I've had the great opportunity to serve with many of the silent professionals, and I appreciate the fact that you made the jump.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we are just about out of time here. And again, Mr. Bachman, just thanks so much. One quick plug, though. If someone's looking, where would they go? Who do they call?
So they would get a hold of CW3 Richard Klofstead, and his number is 651-268-8149.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was Chief Warrant Officer Andrew Bachman. Please stay with us when we come back. We are going to visit with the DAV Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham, and that was a fascinating interview about the Warrant Officer Corps. And in a moment, we're going to talk to the DAV of Minnesota and see what's going on over there. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Are you interested in serving veterans? Do you strive to improve the lives of others? We encourage, invite, and welcome you to consider a career with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. MDVA is hiring for roles across the agency located throughout the state. In our healthcare division, we are looking for staff in nursing, food service, and facilities management to serve our residents in our Minnesota State Veterans Homes. We also need staff to support veterans through our Program and Services division, and there are also a variety of opportunities and support functions that make up our central office. We proudly offer competitive pay and generous benefits as a State of Minnesota employee. At MDVA, you will find meaningful careers that support and care for Minnesota veterans. After all, they have dedicated their lives to ensure our safety. It's our duty to dedicate our best efforts to them. To learn more about current employment opportunities at MDVA, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org/careers.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to talk to DAV of Minnesota. And joining us in the studio now is the commander of the DAV, Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota, Mick Aguirre. Mick, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Oh, thanks, Tom. It's good to be back. I remember last time when I was commander in 2016, 2017, the opportunity to speak to you and your audience was always one of the highlights of my first term. So I'm looking forward to doing this on the second time and gaining from my experience with you and all your people you work with, and providing leadership for the DAV members, over 19,000 members in the state of Minnesota.
Well, Mick, it's good to have you back. I recall in 2016-17, you were so busy, the year kind of went by before you knew it. You must have decided you want to try it again and see what you missed.
Well, yeah, that had a part to do with it. Plus, I was encouraged by my leadership that they thought I could do a good job on the second time around, and they elected me at the last convention in April, so I'm here and looking forward to getting my feet wet again and continuing with the job that we started back in 2016-2017.
Mick, and we want to open up today and talk about the fact that the DAV of Minnesota, specifically the commander, which is you, is a member of the Commander's Task Force. And the Commander's Task Force, of course, puts together the 8 federally chartered veteran service organizations, puts together a legislative agenda, goes up to the Capitol, works with the legislature. We had a record-setting year. We had a really good year with what they call the Veterans Omnibus Bill.
Yeah, Tom, that was one of the highlights of our legislative session this year, getting that passed. It's been in a process maybe 2 or 3 years, and to finally come with that and have the governor sign it was a real highlight of our session with the legislative people. The Commander Task Force consists of 6 or 7 service organizations where we're all the leaders of the different organizations get together every month, and we hammer out what legislative issues that we'd like to present to the state legislator and have them work on it and see if we can get progress and benefits and that are due to our veterans and their spouses and dependents.
Mick, I think one of the biggest accomplishments over there at the state legislature this year was they did a specific veterans omnibus bill, which separated it from all the other bills that they were working on over at the legislature and kind of took the politics out of it. Here's issues we need to cover for our veterans. And it was almost unanimous vote in both the House and the Senate. And it was really a record-setting year, and we're hoping that we have a similar bill next year and every year.
Yeah, Tom, all the Commander Task Force members will be getting together in September and meeting up at Camp Ripley, and there's still work to be done, and we'll be looking at that on the next bill in the next session to get those things that were missed out of this bill and get them included in the next one. But it's always a process.
Very good. We're talking to Commander Mick Aguirre from DAV of Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Mick, one of the big things that DAV does here in Minnesota is provide vans to help transport our veterans to their medical appointments. How's that program going?
Well, it's doing good, Tom. We're in the process of buying 5 new vans and spreading them throughout the state. And we just held our golf tournament. We raised pretty close to $50,000 to contribute to that purchase of the vans that we buy and give them to the VA, and they take care of the gas and the maintenance. But we do provide all volunteer drivers for every one of the vans that we have. And like I said, we should get maybe make the total of 37 this year if everything goes right. And we're looking to replace the ones that wore out and buy new ones so we can expand our program so every veteran that needs transportation to the hospital for their clinic visits will be able to do that by calling maybe a week or two ahead of time and scheduling a van ride. And we'll pick them and their spouse if they need a guidance or an aid to go with them and take them to their appointment and wait there until they get back and bring them home. And this is all done at no cost to the veteran.
And, Mick, those vans are spread all across the state, and the key to finishing that program is you need volunteer drivers all the time. Don't have to be veterans. Have to have a good driver's license. Have to have a good heart. They can work one run a week, or they can work more than that. But you're looking for volunteer drivers all the time.
Oh, that's always been an uncurring issue with us, Tom. You know, getting volunteers, and like you said, you tell us how many hours you want to drive? And there's a short program that you have to do to get qualified, but I think 90% of the veterans out there can do it. And it's just a great way for the retiring people or anybody that wants to serve the veterans. It's a good way to give back, and you get to hear the stories from the people that you're picking up and dropping off, and it's just a great experience. And we're always looking for new drivers, so keep the word out there. If you got time on your hand, you'd like to do something and give it back to the Veterans Society, we really appreciate your time and effort.
So for our listeners, go to davmn.org, and once you get to the website, you'll see where it says volunteers, and you click on that and go in, and it's an easy process. Give as little or as much time as you've got. They need drivers from all over Minnesota, and encourage your friends to go in there too. Mick, it's August. State fair season's coming up. Is the DAV going to be out there?
Oh, yeah. We got a table in the Creative Arts Building, and we'll be manning it every day for 12 days. And so stop by and say hello, and we'll be out there at Military Appreciation Day on August 30th, too, where there's a big tent set up with all the different organizations. I know, Tom, you're out there doing your live broadcast, and that's always a highlight that I like to stop by and see you and make sure everything's going okay.
From noon to 3 o'clock, we'll be over by the KFAN booth in our Minnesota Military Radio tent. And if you stop by, my guess is Mick Aguirre will be somewhere near. Mick, we've got a couple of minutes left here. I understand that you have matching funds for new full life members.
Yes, Tom. We had a program where our new life membership went up to $300 a year for a full lifetime membership. And we got a program where the local chapter we'll put in $100, and our department will put in $100. So that just leaves a balance of $100 for the new member that wants to join, and you'll never receive another membership bill again. And it's just a great way to do it. Otherwise, you can even start at $10 a month and put it on your card, and they will automatically charge you $10 a month till you reach your goal of $300. But I would say 80 or 90% would like to take advantage of this great opportunity to only pay $100 for a full lifetime membership. I think it's the best deal around.
Mick, you make me want to sign up, but I already did. So we'll save those hundreds for the new members. Mick, we got about a minute left. Part of that omnibus bill that was passed at the state legislature provides for a post 9/11 bonus. We need to get those veterans to get a hold of the right authorities to collect that bonus.
Yes, your county service officers or your national service officers, anybody that does that work for the veterans, just give them a call and they'll get the paperwork started for you. It's a pretty easy process of getting qualified. So I recommend to anybody that thinks they deserve that bonus to go ahead and get a hold of your NSO, your county service officers, and get that paperwork done, and so you get the check in the mail.
So get a hold of your DAV veteran service officer or your county veteran service officer, or you can even go to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and they'll help you apply as well. Mick, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about a thing called the PACT Act, or the Burn Bill, that was passed this week. We're speaking with Mick Aguirre, the commander of DAV here in Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham, and we're talking to a Marine in the studio. He's the commander of the DAV of Minnesota, Mick Aguirre. And Mick, this has been an interesting week. The United States Senate finally got together, and they passed a bill called the PACT Act, which a lot of people refer to as the Burn Pit Act. It's much larger than that. And my understanding is it's going to the president's desk next Monday for signing, and the president has said he's going to sign that because he thinks those burn pits had something to do with his son's cancer. And so it's a pretty exciting week.
This is a long time coming. They had passed it before in unanimous, but then it went back to some kind of committee, and 25 senators voted against it. And then visited it again, and now it's passed, and it's just a great opportunity. These diseases or complications from the service, and whether Vietnam or burn pits, it's just a shame, or it's a tragedy that some people have to wait so long to get the VA to admit or have them get compensated for these different ailments that they come up with.
You know, we got too many veterans out there that can't afford good health care, and now they're going to have access to it. Mick, for our generation, Vietnam veterans, there are some presumptive diseases that are covered because of exposure to Agent Orange. There were about 18, in the last year, there were three more passed. And in this PACT Act, they now cover hypertension from that. So for our Vietnam veterans that can tie the hypertension to their service in Vietnam, they should start their claim. Mick, you usually tell me they start with a county veteran service officer, and then your DAV veteran service officers can help propel that claim.
That's correct, Tom. I would recommend starting at your county veteran service officers and the national service officers from the DAV located at the Whipple Building over in St. Paul. They're ranked within the top five offices in this national level. So they always do a good job there. But they're undermanned like some of our other offices. So it's a process where it's not going to happen overnight, but get that claim filed and get the paperwork started. That's the most thing I could recommend to anybody that has a question or think they were affected by any of the things that they did while they were in the service.
Get the claim started, get in line, and get things moving. And if you want more information about the DAV veteran service officers, you can go to davmn.org. And Mick, for our more recent veterans who served where there were burn pits and all that activity, this now acknowledges, shorter than the 50 years we've been fighting for Agent Orange stuff, that some of that can cause a lot of problems that our more recent veterans are having, and they should get started right away, too.
That's correct, Tom. Like you said, the sooner the better. If you have any questions, just contact your county veteran service officers, and they'll steer you in the right directions and give you answers as much as they can.
Mick, we just got about a minute and a half left. I know one of the things that you wanted to focus on this year was women veterans issues.
Yeah, we have a women's veterans committee there with our department of the DAV, and we just want to make sure that the women's veterans are being taken care of at the most efficient way they can. And there's some places where we heard some kind of horror stories with the VA about not even having a gynecologist online on staff at some of our C boxes, which are the local outpatient veterans centers. So we're trying to address that and any other issues that they have, put them in the forefront at the VA, because they serve just as much as the men did. And I think there's a lack of recognition for the women veterans, and we'll hope to rectify that. And I hope to make that the high point of my second term here. If I can do that, that'd be great.
And Mick, we're coming up. The VA is going to start they're going to start construction on a new women's clinic out there. So that won't be open probably for another year and a half, but that's pretty exciting.
That's it, Tom. That's what we're looking for. And I'm talking to the five women on my committee, and they're just saying, let's take the baby steps and then we'll run with it. But we got to get the recognition out there and the necessity that they need for the women veterans.
Mick, it's good to get you back in the studio. I look forward to talking to you this year.
Yeah, Tom, it's good to be back. I feel right at home.
All right, Mick, thank you. That was Mick Aguirre, the commander of DAV in Minnesota. Joining me now is Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Director Kelly, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's always a pleasure being with you. Thanks for having me back.
Director, it seems like it's been years and years that we've been talking about this, but COVID just won't go away, and there's another couple of versions that have popped up.
You know, I'm tired of talking about it. I know we all are. So yeah, we got this BA5 variant that, you know, it's just hanging on. And so we are, people are going to be tired of hearing me say this, but we're still doing many of the same restrictions in the hospital that we've had for the last couple of years, masking and distancing and those kinds of things. And this new variant, fortunately people are they're not getting real sick, but they're getting kind of sick. And so we're still sort of seeing 15 to 20 COVID inpatients in our hospital and quite a few outpatients. So still encourage caution.
And that means a lot of our veterans are experiencing Paxlovid.
yeah. Hopefully without rebound.
And without that bad taste in your mouth. But that's things come with that.
Right.
Director, we've been talking for the last few weeks that there's a new Veterans Crisis Line, and it's a lot easier to remember.
Yeah, so we've been monitoring that ever since a few weeks now that's been live, and we had anticipated that more veterans would access that line largely for that reason. It's easy to remember, know how to get there, and they know what to do. And so, in fact, we have seen a slight uptick, and the way that works, Tom, is that when veterans call this crisis line, and if there's a veteran that needs something immediate, that crisis line will reach back to us if they're in our local area, and we will in turn get a hold of that veteran. So easier to use, more people are using it. The old line still works, the old crisis line number, but yeah, this is the national line, and like you point out, easier to remember and shorter. And so when you're having a crisis, you don't have to think too much about it now.
So 988 is the number, and as we tell our veterans as often as we can, if you're a veteran or a family of a veteran who is changing, maybe upset, mm-hmm. maybe depressed, maybe drinking more, feel free to call. Help is available.
Yeah, it really takes you're absolutely right. It takes all kinds of people to engage in this process. So encourage everybody to kind of be on the lookout for a help veteran who needs help and to help them out.
And that new number is 988 plus one. So, Director, are you still wearing your hard hat? Is construction season still going on out there?
Not as bad as it is on the roads in Minnesota, Tom. But, yeah, we have a lot of construction going on here on our campus. And so a couple of the things that veterans will see when they come here, we have a really good project going on with revising our outpatient entrance. It's going to be terrific when it's done in November, but in the meantime, it's going to result in some rerouting of veterans, all of whom will go through the main entrance when they come to the hospital. So it's working fine. Veterans have gotten accustomed to it, and it's going to be a good deal. Kind of like when you they close a section of the road and you always say, well, that's a pain, but it's all in the name of good progress. Same thing here. That's going to be a good project. And also mention that we have a pretty good expansion going on in our mental health spaces, which is going to take us from 24 to 30 beds, and mental health services are hard to get in the state of Minnesota, and really nationally they're hard to get. And so this is one area where we're really limited in buying care in the community when we need it, so we bring our veterans here for our inpatient mental health, and we needed more beds, and we're in the process of doing that, and the progress has been good. It's still a little ways away, but they're swinging a lot of hammers downstairs, so it's going to be soon.
Good work, sir. Director, just this past week, the United States Congress, the Senate, passed what was referred to as the PACT Act. Some people call it the burn pit bill, but it expands access to benefits for veterans going back as far as Vietnam veterans on some of the presumptive diseases. And I think it's probably going to cause you and the rest of the VA healthcare system to be hiring and staffing up for a lot of new patients.
Yeah, what we talked about when you were here doing your live show, Tom, is that this is a good thing, right? This is really needed and a critical benefit that veterans have earned, and something that we need to take care of. And so it will result in many, many veterans who will be engaging in VA health care and engaging the Veterans Benefits Administration in benefits determination. And so I've been working with Kim Graves, the director over at the regional office, the last couple of days pretty consistently, knowing that we're going to have to coordinate our efforts because there's going to be a very large number of veterans seeking our help. And while we haven't gotten any implementing guidance from the VA, which we will get, in the meantime, we're starting to get questions from veterans. So at the very least, while we're preparing to offer the service, we need to be responsive to veterans who might have questions and be able to at least respond to those questions.
So you're always hiring, and you'll probably be looking for plenty more very soon.
Yeah, you know, there's even talk in this act, Tom, of some new sites of care. And so I don't know that we'll get any of those in Minnesota, but I do think that, you know, healthcare is struggling in hiring all over the world now, not just in the VA, not just in the States, but yeah, we're always looking for doctors, nurses, technicians, and others who want to come to work for the VA. It's a good place to work. It's a great mission. So we're always looking for more help.
Very good, sir. Thanks for joining us again today.
Pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System at Minnesota Military Radio. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Chief Warrant 4 Andrew Bachman, Commander Mick Aguirre from DAV of Minnesota, Director Pat Kelly from Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, my co-host today, Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we record our show from our annual Minnesota Military Family Foundation Golf Classic. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.